Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Several years before the Maguindanao massacre, Ramon Tulfo was already writing about Andal Ampatuan Sr.'s private army. The Maguindanao governor wasn't pleased about this, and in a chance encounter at the airport, he confronted the Inquirer columnist. At the time, Tulfo recalled, Andal Sr.'s bodyguards were all in army uniform and lugging M16 rifles and M60 machine guns. Quote, "I lost count after 30, end quote. Tulfo told First Gentleman Mike Arroyo about it. He asked why Andal Sr. was allowed to go with so many bodyguards around Metro Manila, which was already outside his turf. And this was how Arroyo supposedly replied. Pabayaan mo na siya, Mon, dahil atin yan. This is Super Evil, A Beautiful Place to Die, an Inquirer podcast powered by Puma Podcast. I'm Pam Pastor, and this is Episode 3. Caso Orido. A day after the Maguindanao massacre, President Gloria Macapagal Arroyo made this announcement.
I have directed the AFP and the police to order their units to conduct immediate and relentless pursuit of the perpetrators to secure the affected areas in Maguindanao. No effort will be spared to bring justice to the victims and hold the perpetrators accountable to the full limit of the law.
On the same day, GMA's advisor on the peace process, Jess Dureza, met with the Ampatuans in Sharifaguac. He told the Inquirer that the Ampatuans had committed to submit themselves to any investigation. But at the same time, Dureza said he didn't ask the Ampatuans if Andal Jr. had led the men who perpetrated the massacre. Instead, Dureza said, quote, "I went there to tell them about the creation of the Crisis Management Committee and about the investigation." End quote. The Maguindanao massacre was so shocking and so unimaginable that the people wanted to see swift action from the government. They wanted decisions to be made to show that order still prevailed in what suddenly felt like such a lawless place. They wanted to be assured that justice would be carried out. Instead, what we got was presidential spokesperson Lorelai Fajardo calling the brutal killings an incident between two families in Mindanao. Quote, "This has nothing to do with President Macapagal Arroyo or the administration." End quote. Fajardo added that she didn't think GMA's friendship with the Ampatuans would be severed. Quote, "Just because they're in this situation doesn't mean we will turn our backs on them. It doesn't mean that they are no longer our friends if ever they indeed committed the crime." End quote. And so, the Arroyo administration was criticized for treating the Ampatuans with kid gloves. Senator Rodolfo Biazon asked,
"Why is there no arrest made yet? Is political consideration a major factor here?"
Remember the Inquirer front page that showed the graphic scene of the massacre site? It also featured a photo of GMA praying with Zaldi Ampatuan and Father Andal Sr. before a cabinet meeting in Cotabato. Arroyo was said to be so close to Andal Sr. that she called him Ama. She was even ARMM Governor Zaldi Ampatuan's alibi for the day of the murders. Zaldi told reporters, quote, "I was with PGMA the whole day to discuss the political scenario in Sulu. I learned of the sad news at 12:30 p.m. I was shocked and appalled," end quote. To Gloria Macapagal Arroyo, the Ampatuans were important allies. Commission on Human Rights Chair Lila De Lima told reporters that the Ampatuans, quote, "deliver landslide votes or swing votes to mostly administration candidates. We know they fabricated or manufactured votes," end quote. An excerpt from the Inquirer article, "Warring Clans Were Political Allies."
In the 2004 presidential election, Maguindanao Governor Andal Ampatuan Sr. proved his worth to Ms. Arroyo by delivering votes in massive numbers for her, helping her defeat the late actor Fernando Poe Jr. amid charges of fraud.
Mindanews journalist Froilan Gallardo.
The Ampatuan pledged to Arroyo na mag-zero si Fernando Poe in Maguindanao. Zero nga eh. Tawag nila daw kumanbo. At sasabihin natin na 5 towns, 6 towns, 0. That's strange, di ba? Sinasabi ng isang Nampril, yung kaibigan ko sa Lanao Sur, Fernando Poe can never be zero, eh. He's one of the most revered actor in the Moro. Maraming boats yan. And why zero?
Remember the Hello Garci scandal in 2005? Maguindanao was among the provinces mentioned in the wiretapped conversations supposedly between Arroyo and former Election Commissioner Virgilio Garceliano.
I recognize that making any such call was a lapse in judgment. I am sorry.
Both GMA and Garceliano denied the allegations of vote rigging in Mindanao. But there were multiple reports, including from Moro Islamic Liberation Front spokesman Aid Kabalu, that, quote, "there was no actual conduct of elections in many parts of Maguindanao," end quote. A member of the Board of Election Inspectors said teachers were ordered to fill out ballots on the eve of the voting. According to that same person, NAMFREL representatives weren't allowed to enter the voting centers in Sharif Aguac. 4 days after the massacre, Inquirer columnist Neil H. Cruz wrote that GMA allegedly had Garceliano hidden by the Ampatuans at the height of the election scandal. Quote, "That is why the national government is treading softly and slowly," end quote. In fact, in the elections held 2 years after the Hello Garci scandal, the Ampatuans helped deliver a 12-0 sweep for Arroyo's senatorial slate. An excerpt from an Inquirer editorial, "Dynasty Tragedy."
How did one political family come to exercise absolute control over one province? By giving the Arroyo administration, the central source of government patronage and power, exactly what it needs, and earning for itself special or legal authority to do, in its own domain, whatever it pleases.
A year after the Hello Garci scandal, the Ampatuan Militia and MILF clashed in Maguindanao. GMA then issued an executive order to allow the use of force multipliers. This effectively legalized private armies. It was this executive order, the Inquirer editors wrote, that led directly to the Maguindanao massacre. Caroline Arguillas of Mindanews had written about the billions of pesos Arroyo had poured into Maguindanao.
Maguindanao and the Ampatuans have always been awash in cash. Not so much because of any economic activity of note, except for agriculture and occasional kidnap-for-ransom episodes in the area. The cash came nearly entirely from Manila, courtesy of President Gloria Macapagal Arroyo.
An excerpt from History to Remember GMA with Massacre, an Inquirer column by Solita Colyas Monsod.
She coddled them. That is the only way one can describe the relationship of President Macapagal Arroyo and the Ampatuans of Maguindanao. And that coddling has resulted in the Maguindanao massacre, the biggest, blackest mark in the 9-year performance record of her administration, reducing to insignificance any of its achievements. It is with the massacre that she will be connected when history judges her. She allowed the Ampatuans to arm themselves, and the declared reason seems to be good enough. The Ampatuan Patriarch needed them to ensure that the Moro Islamic Liberation Front would not get a foothold in Maguindanao. And that seemingly altruistic move created a monster, legitimizing the Ampatuan's private army, helping the clan consolidate its power through fear and intimidation, with at least some of the weapons and ammunition even provided by the military.
Human Rights Watch said that as far back as 7 years before the massacre, Maguindanao community leaders were already writing Arroyo about 33 killings as well as other abuses the Ampatuans were responsible for. There were more letters to the president in the following years, telling her about even more human rights violations. But she failed to act on them. GMA declared November 26, 2009, a day of mourning for the victims.
Ako ay nagdedeklara ng araw ng pagluluksa para sa mga biktima ng nangyaring maramihang pagpapaslang sa Mindanao. Hindi makakatakas ang mga may kagagawan ng karumal-dumal na krimeng ito. Hahabulin sila ng batas hanggang sila ay mapaparusahan.
And on the actual day of prayer and mourning for the victims, in a speech that lasted more than 10 minutes, GMA failed to even name the Ampatuans as the people behind the massacre.
We gather here today in the shadow of the tragedy that was recently visited upon so many of our brothers and sisters in Mindanao. It was a blight on our nation. Men and women, young and old, political battlers and journalists, all were victims of a shameful crime that has no place in civilized society. Political violence has been a sad legacy of our nation. We had made considerable progress in protecting our people from such violence in the last few years. Now let us pray today that the events of this week will not deter this nation from breaking the bonds of violence that plagues our political system.
In his Inquirer column, Juan El Mercado cited The National, an Abu Dhabi-based newspaper, quote, "The murder breaks all the rules of the blood feuds known as Rido in Mindanao," end quote. Rido, or clan feuds, involve retaliatory attacks that can last for generations. This was exactly what was on the mind of the Mangudadatu's lawyer, Nena Santos, on the day of the massacre.
We received a call asking us if they are allowed to get the bodies so that under the Muslim rites, they can be buried in the 24 hours. But we had a meeting with the Mangudadatus and they said, if you do that, we cannot do the autopsy and then it's very hard for us to file a case then. You decide you want a Rido or you want a caso. So the consensus was, okay, caso. At the time, we are already contemplating that nothing will happen with the investigation of the CIDG or the NBI or any government agency, because it was the time that they explained to me how powerful the Ampatuans are, how they are connected with Gloria Arroyo, and nobody will testify against them. If anyone dares to testify against them, then they're dead. So we'll just gather this evidence ahead. And then anyway, just wait for the Gloria to disappear. Anyway, the election is coming, and then file it.
The families wanted justice for their loved ones who had been killed mercilessly. And they were ready to fight for it. Grace Morales, who lost her husband and sister in the massacre.
Hindi lang naman po yun, isang mukha. Ang daming mukha po nun. Andun yung mukha ng anomalia, yung pagkagahaman sa kapangyarihan, at andun din yung pagpatay sa kalayaan ng mga mamamahayag, mga taong wala namang kasalanan, kundi ang gumawa lang, magtrabaho lang. Yung galit ko dahil sa nangyari, yun yung nagbigay sa akin ng lakas para ituloy yung laban para sa kanila.
Nonoy Espina, Chairman of the National Union of Journalists of the Philippines.
Those families really at the time felt abandoned. It was clear to them who was behind them, a very close ally of the government. And then they knew what was happening. They knew that government was negotiating the surrender of the murderer of their kin.
Nonoy recalls seeing Presidential Peace Advisor Jess Dureza in Maguindanao.
He said he was going to negotiate for the surrender. And I was like, what? Negotiate the surrender of the suspect in a mass murder? That was really weird, you know, that the government was bending backwards to appease a mass murderer.
An excerpt from Puni, an Inquirer column by Conrado de Quiros.
Why on earth would you ask the author of something that easily qualifies in the international courts as a crime against humanity to give himself up? Do you tell the Abu Sayyaf, when they've left their hostages dead and decapitated, to turn themselves over or risk military action? Do you tell the MILF, when you believe them to have ambushed a group of soldiers, to surrender themselves? No. You send your special forces to storm their lairs and to run them to the ground. If they surrender, fine. If they don't, just as fine, if not better. You do not make it a matter of choice. Paying for a crime is not a matter of volition. Paying for a crime of this magnitude is not a matter of, sige na nga, suko na nga lang ako.
And here's Nonoy again.
That was the day I realized that there is really, really, really something wrong in this system of governance. When the central government relies too much on local warlords and local leaders, that it has to tolerate their wrongdoing. And I think it still holds up to now.
The day after the massacre, Maguindanao, Sultan Kudarat, and Cotabato were placed under a state of emergency. The Ampatuans were expelled from their political party. And on November 26, 3 days after the massacre, Andal Ampatuan Jr. was placed in government custody after his brother, Zaldi, turned him over to Jess Dureza. Attorney Nena Santos.
So the government stepped in and they sent all the highest officials of the land. They wanted to have a semblance that justice works.
Remember how Dureza had told the Inquirer that the Ampatuans had promised to cooperate with the investigation? In a piece he wrote in Mindanews, Dureza, a former Davao journalist, talked about how, 2 days after the massacre, he asked Zaldi Ampatuan to bring in his brother Andal Jr. Zaldi told Dureza that he would consult his father, Andal Sr., first. Dureza had given them a deadline of 5 p.m., but the Ampatuans requested for the deadline to be moved to 10 a.m. of the next day because, quote, the Ampatuan clan would meet that evening and bid goodbye to Datu Unsay. Unsay is the nickname of Andal Jr. Dureza granted this request. The government had also received criticism for the fact that Andal Jr. had not been handcuffed after his surrender. Dureza's explanation? A policeman had told him that the keys to the two pairs of handcuffs they had were missing, so they couldn't use them. Nonoy was there to witness the surrender.
So we went to the old capital. Actually, medyo kabado nga kasi. Coming from Sultan Kudarat, the road leads you entering Saripagwa. Tahimik. So we went to the capital. And the capital had been turned into a garrison, basically. There were a lot of soldiers. Convoy arrived. They got out. Zaldi Ampatuan. There's this colonel, I don't recall his name anymore, but... He was escorting Unsay, who had a scarf around his head, and family members and others. They loaded Unsay onto a helicopter. Kasama dun si Jess Dureza. Eh, kami, siyempre, kuha ng pictures, trying to capture the story. And as soon as the helicopters left, I turned my head, and there were the Capitol employees lined up. And they were waving goodbye. Some of them had tears streaming from their eyes. Once the choppers were out of sight, it was like an almost physical thing. The air turned literally cold. Nanlamig talaga. And nung lumingon kami, ang sama ng titig sa amin ng mata. So, tara, let's get out of here. Naisip namin, hindi kaya tayo nakaalis anong mangyayari sa atin. I understand the loyalties. They probably felt that we had something to do with, you know, the capture of their leader.
The helicopter flew Andal Jr. to General Santos City, where he was presented to Justice Secretary Agnes Divanadera. When Andal Jr. stepped out of the chopper, the scarf he had used to cover his face was gone. Instead, he wore a red and blue putong, a headband usually used by Moro warriors. That afternoon, Andal Jr., accompanied by his lawyer Siegfried Fortun, was flown to Manila and taken to the NBI office. Andal Jr. had refused the services of a public attorney. Why would he need one when his family had already tapped around 40 lawyers? And according to the fact-finding mission report of the Freedom for Media, Freedom for All Network, the national government even flew Siegfried Fortun from Cotabato City to General Santos in an Air Force aircraft. Quote, the government spent government resources to fly in the private lawyer of the man it is charging with multiple counts of murder. End quote. A witness later told the court that he heard Andal Sr. say he would only hand over Andal Jr. to Dureza if Dureza promised that his son would be surrendered only to the care of GMA. That same witness testified that Andal Sr. later tried to bribe Dureza, an allegation Dureza has denied. A day after Andal Jr.'s surrender, Ismael Toto Mangudadatu was finally able to file his certificate of candidacy. He traversed the same road that his wife and sisters, as well as the rest of the convoy of journalists and supporters, did just 4 days before. This time, he had been provided with an abundance of police and military escorts. Gibo Teodoro, who was running for president, was there too. He said he accompanied Toto to ensure the safety of the convoy. This was interesting, considering he was one of the people trying to convince Toto not to run in those meetings with the Ampatuans and Mangudadatus. Meanwhile, Andal Jr. was in NBI custody. The press described him as a chubby, stone-faced man in his 40s. He told them that he played no part in the massacre. Quote, "The reason I came out is to prove that I am not hiding and that I am not guilty," end quote. Meanwhile, Human Rights Watch heard that when Andal Jr. was arrested, he asked, "Which hotel will I be billeted in?" 5 days after the massacre, the Inquirer front page featured a big photo of Andal Jr. behind bars. Zaldi Ampatuan complained that this was trial by publicity. He said, quote, "I am hurt by the allegations that my brother is involved. It's more painful when I watch him on TV and how the authorities sent my brother to jail. I never expected that," end quote. Father Andal Sr. said, with tears in his eyes, "Why are they dragging our names? I felt that they wanted to show to the public that we are violent," end quote. But his son had other problems aside from the media coverage. Andal Jr. complained that it was difficult to breathe in the cramped detention cell that he shared with 17 other inmates. He had a history of asthma, he said. But the medico-legal division of the NBI declared him fit, so there would be no hospital arrest for him. "We can't just join the fad of hospital arrests," said Justice Secretary Devanadera. Difficulty breathing wasn't Andal Jr.'s only complaint. His cell was hot too. And he had another issue. Ghosts. Yes, ghosts. This warlord, known for being ruthless and violent, who was said to be laughing and enjoying himself as he shot the victims of the massacre, claimed to be terrified of the paranormal. And so he chose to sleep on a bench outside his jail cell. And he hid under a blanket each time he slept. If you've murdered Lord knows how many people, I guess you would be afraid of ghosts too. Meanwhile, the families of the victims were still trying to find their loved ones. One body had three claimants, but Hannibal Cachuela's family was sure it was his. Hannibal was the Maguindanao bureau chief for newspaper Punto News. He had been shot 10 times. Hannibal's younger brother Ricardo said that his kuya had been good to him. He had always been there to guide him and help him with household expenses and even with his child's education. In General Santos City, a mass wake was held for 10 journalists killed in the massacre. 10 white coffins for 10 fallen men and women of the media. Maura Montaño, mother of Marife Montaño, said she knew of the dangers of her daughter's profession, but she understood that Marife loved what she did. Maura said she always told her daughter, "Stop the madness, Marife. Many journalists have already been killed. I don't want you to be like them." Also at the mass wake was the body of Leia Dalmacio. Leia was the associate editor of Soccsargent Today and a columnist of News Focus. She was a wife and a mom of three. Leia had been shot 9 times. Her ring finger had been amputated during the massacre. Ian Subang, publisher of Soxergen Today, sustained 18 injuries. Ian had a great sense of humor. The jester among local journalists. He left behind 3 children with his wife, Luisa. Gina De La Cruz, a reporter for Saksi Mindanawan News and RPN DXDX, was a single mom of 5. She had been shot 3 times. Phoebe Bataluna was mourning 2 people at the mass wake. Her father, Robelio Bataluna, a correspondent and advertising man for Gold Star Daily, and her boyfriend, Benji Adolfo, also of Gold Star Daily. Father Robelio sustained 8 gunshot wounds. He had also been hit with a blunt object on the forehead. Boyfriend Benji, meanwhile, had been shot 15 times. His face had been so horribly injured that he had been wrapped in cloth before he was placed in his coffin. At the time of his murder, he had been sending his younger sister to school. He had only been a journalist for 3 months. And what of the military men who assured these journalists that they would be safe? Alfredo Cayton, the 6th Infantry Division commander, was sacked. So was Colonel Medardo Gislani, the 106th Brigade commander. Gislani was the guy who had told Toto Mangudadatu not to go to the massacre site and threatened to arrest him if he did. But the consequences of their actions were short-lived. They would later be absolved by the armed forces of the Philippines and even promoted. As for the lower-ranking soldiers and policemen, many of them were relieved of their duties and investigated. A number were taken into custody. 11 days after the massacre, President Arroyo declared martial law in Maguindanao. 4,000 troops descended upon the province. Press Secretary Serge Redmonde called it a bold step in answer to the cry for justice of the victims of the Maguindanao massacre. But lawyers, senators, the Commission on Human Rights, former President Fidel V. Ramos, and even the Supreme Court called it unnecessary, overkill, without basis, unjustified, and dangerous. Senator Miriam Defensor Santiago said that legal advisors who convinced Arroyo to declare martial law, quote, should be taken out and shot. They should be buried with a backhoe, end quote. Congressman Juan Miguel Arroyo defended his mother.
Some sectors were saying the administration was treating the issue of Maguindanao with kid gloves. Now that she has placed Maguindanao under martial law to effect warrantless arrests, search and seizures aimed at dismantling private armies, and confiscating loose firearms in that particular area, they are again crying hell. It's a case of damned if you do, damned if you don't.
Petitions were filed at the Supreme Court asking for the martial law declaration to be nullified. GMA lifted martial law over a week later. As this was going on, Andal Ampatuan Sr. was arrested. He tried to evade it by pretending to be gravely ill. 4 of his sons were also taken into custody. Zaldi Ampatuan, ARMM Governor, Acting Maguindanao Governor Sajid Ampatuan, Maguindanao Vice Governor Ahmad Ampatuan, and Sharifaguac Mayor Anwar Ampatuan. Hundreds of Ampatuan militiamen were disarmed. Raids were carried out in Maguindanao, and the number of people arrested kept rising. 62, 67, 117. During one of the military raids, thousands of voters' IDs were found in a vacant lot near Andal Senior's mansion in Sharif Aguac. They were buried together with a cache of firearms and ammunition enough to arm a military battalion. Mindanao's Froilan Gallardo.
I was with the military soldiers who searched for their weapons. Do you know what we found on the first day? 20 Barrett rifles, 50 caliber machine guns, 3 armored cars, World War II type armored cars, 2 B-150. The soldiers were saying they could have offered a resistance with them. All the bullets we found, the bullets, were all, you know, very, very brand new, unlike the soldiers.
Army and police units uncovered more than 300,000 bullets for M16 assault rifles in a warehouse in Mamasapano town. They found 39 high-powered firearms and thousands of rounds of ammunition at a mango farm in Datuhofer town the next day. There were sacks and boxes of ammo for assault rifles. And there were more weapons buried deep in the ground at the back of Andal Senior's mansion. They recovered armored vehicles, anti-tank weapons, mortar bombs, grenade and rocket launchers, bazookas, sniper rifles, and automatic pistols. 1,500 assorted firearms. 200,000 bullets more would be found. That's on top of the original 300,000. The Department of Justice had requested that the murder cases be moved from Cotabato City. And 2 weeks after the massacre, the Supreme Court granted the request. The trial would take place in Quezon City. The case was raffled off to Judge Luisito Cortez, but he refused to try the case. He filed a motion to inhibit himself and told reporters, "I am not the only one to be affected. I have to consider the security of my family, my staff, and their families. It is not a simple issue, and it's not as if we are avoiding the case." End quote. Cortez added, "What is glory without a family?" He had already survived an ambush earlier in his career. Justice Secretary De Vanadera said, "If I were him, I would look for another job because I easily get frightened. That is unacceptable." End quote. Senator Miriam Defensor Santiago meanwhile said this could have a chilling effect on judges. Quote, "You have to bring yourself first in the line of fire. That's the job of a judge." End quote. Attorney Nena Santos.
Hindi na ako nag-react kasi alam kong threatened din siya sa mga drugs cases niya. In fact, dalawa na siyang mayroong attempt sa kanya na i-ambush. Tsaka naisip ko rin na okay lang na hindi sa kanya maglagay kasi pa-inhibit din ako ni Purton ng mga akusado. Dahil yun nga, magkaklase kami ni Judge Louie sa San Leda.
Justice Secretary De Vanadera said that she had received a message telling her to go slow on the ampatuans. Threats had also been made against judges and court staff in Cotabato City. The Supreme Court ordered a new raffle of the case. This time it went to the court of Judge Jocelyn Solis Reyes. She told the PNP that she would treat the trial as an ordinary case, one that would not require any special police security. PNP Deputy Director General Jefferson Soriano said she was very composed, very confident. A graduate of University of Santo Tomas Law, she had been a public attorney for 3 years before becoming a public prosecutor. At the time of the massacre, she had been a judge for 8 years. 197 people would be officially charged in the multiple murder case. 15 members of the Ampatuan family. 70 members of the PNP and AFP. 110 Ampatuan militiamen. And 2 other government officials. Here's journalist Nonoy Espina.
I really don't know what went on in their minds, pero, well, as the evidence suggests, they actually met as a family and plotted this. That really says something of what they felt they were.
There would be hundreds of witnesses in a trial that would last for a decade. Lakmudin Salyaw was one of them. Since 1987, Salyaw had been a loyal kasambahay to several Ampatuans. He said his duties included holding on to Andal Sr.'s mobile phone, taking and making phone calls for him, giving him his medicine, serving his meals, and making sure his food wasn't poisoned. But he would turn against the family, because one of Andal Sr.'s daughters told him, her father had said he would kill him because he knows so many things. Salyaw would tell the court how the family planned the massacre. He testified that during a meeting, Andal Sr. asked his sons, other family members, and supporters if they agreed to kill Toto Mangudadatu. Salyaw said everyone in attendance agreed and laughed. Salyaw said that at the meeting, Andal Jr. told his father, "Madali lang yan, ama. Patayin sila lahat kapag pumunta sila dito." There had actually been multiple meetings, court documents say. 4 months before the massacre, a dozen members of the Ampatuan clan gathered at the Century Park Hotel in Manila with political advisors, lawyers, commanders, and supporters. There, Andal Sr. said that Toto had to be killed because he couldn't be prevented from running for Maguindanao governor. Zaldi said, "Dapat malinis ang pagkagawa, dahil kung hindi malinis, madudungisan ang pangalan ko at makukulong tayong lahat." A week before the massacre, around 400 people, including members of the Ampatuan family, their political allies and police officers, met at Andal Sr.'s farm to plan Toto's murder. They weren't sure where Toto would file his candidacy, so they made plans and assigned officers for 3 locations: Manila, Cotabato City, and Sharif Aguac. Anwar Ampatuan said that the Mangudadatus would have to be killed and their vehicles should be buried. Ahmad Ampatuan said, "Pwede. Anong ginagawa ng bako natin?" Others offered the use of their men and firearms. Zaldi Ampatuan said, "Kahit lahat ng baril ko, gamitin nyo." But reminded them that the plan had to be executed well. Otherwise, they could be caught. 4 days before the massacre, another meeting was held in Andal Jr.'s mansion. There, he discussed the plan to set up checkpoints. He also brought up the possibility that Toto would not file his own COC. Whoever they were, he wanted them blocked and brought to him to be killed. After that meeting, Sukarno Dikay, the Maguindanao Deputy Police Chief, began having checkpoints installed. 3 days before the massacre, there was another meeting. Police cars lined the national highway. Armed men in different uniforms were ordered to wait for the Mangudadatus. Maguindanao Deputy Police Chief Dikay also gathered men from different municipal police stations. At a checkpoint near Sitio Masalay, a witness heard the men saying they would shoot the Mangudadatu convoy. Residents evacuated in fear. More checkpoints sprouted. Bong Andal was summoned by Andal Sr. to one of these meetings. Bong used to work as a gas boy and janitor at a gasoline station owned by the Ampatuans. He had risen through the ranks to become then Maguindanao's motor pool manager and was in charge of heavy equipment. Andal Sr. asked him if their backhoe was in good condition. Did it have a full tank of gas? Yes, Bong replied. On the day of the massacre, Andal Sr. and Andal Jr. would ask him to bring the backhoe to Sitio Masalay. 2 days before the massacre, the Ampatuans and their men had another meeting led by Andal Jr. They discussed the checkpoints, making sure each one had numerous policemen and armed civilians. The plan was for the police to flag down the vehicles and for the armed civilians to fire at them. Maguindanao Deputy Police Chief Dikay commanded the police, while Andal Jr. was in charge of the armed civilians. More armed men arrived. Salibo Town Vice Mayor Canor Ampatuan told residents, especially those who had kids, to leave their homes. On the morning of November 23, the day of the massacre, Kasambahay Lakmudin Salyao was with Andal Sr. at a rest house in his farm. At 10:30 a.m., Andal Sr. spoke to Andal Jr. on the phone. The conversation was on loudspeaker, so Salyao could hear it. "Ama, nandito na sila," Andal Jr. said. "Andyan ba si Toto?" his father asked. "Wala, ama. Asawa lang niya at ang kapatid niyang babae na si Bai Eden," was the son's reply. The old man said, "Alam mo na ang gagawin mo. Patayin mo na sila lahat. Ikabila mo lamang ang mga media." Ikabila means don't include. But Andal Jr. said, "Hindi, ama. Lubos-lubusin na natin ito. Iginagawa rin natin ito. Lubos-lubusin na natin patayin silang lahat. Makapagsalita pa kung hindi natin ubusin." And Andal Sr. replied, "Mabuti." In the next episode of Super Evil, A Beautiful Place to Die.
They still had their cell phones. They were able to send some messages that they were in danger and so on. But then seeing the place, they were practically trapped there. And then you've got armed people around you, surrounding you. And there really was no way to escape.
The courage and the strength they exhibited. They've been threatened. There have been bribe attempts. There have been attempts to buy them out. None of them backed out of the case.
Kahit na nakakatawa na ang mayayari sa court, wala kang makita ang expression sa kanya. Walang reaction sa face niya.
You've been listening to Super Evil, A Beautiful Place to Die, Episode 3, Caso Orido. Super Evil is an Enquirer podcast powered by Puma Podcast. It's hosted and written by me, Pam Pastor. The series is produced by Trisha Aquino. You also heard her voice in the quotes and excerpts from the paper. Audio editor is Mark Casilian. We release a new episode every 2 weeks. Don't miss the next one. Subscribe to Super Evil on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or Stitcher. Let us know what you think. Tweet us at Super Evil Pod or tag us on Instagram, also at Super Evil Pod. Thank you to the Enquirer reporters and correspondents who covered the case during this period. They include Vault Contreras, TJ Borgonio, Jocelyn R. Uy, Christian Esguera, Alquin Papa, Tina Santos, Norman Bordadora, Hilka Bakungan Jr., Dennis J. Santos, Charlie Senyase, Jeffrey M. Tupas, Julie Alipala, William R. Magbanwa, Nina Calleja, Jeanette Andrade, Donna Pazibugan, Christine Avendano, Laila Salaveria, Achilles Zonio, Rosa May de Guzman, Vicente Corrales, Julie Aurelio, Nico Dizon, Edwin Fernandez, Jeffrey Maitem, Nestor Burgos, Charlene Cayabyab, Nico Alconaba, Christine Alave, Ryan Rosauro, Cynthia Balana, Kathy Amsuan, Nash Maulana, Jermelina Lacorte, Josel Badilla, Philip Tobeza, Carlo Agamon, Michael Lim Ubak, Orlando Dinoy, and Marlon Ramos. Thanks to Inquirer Mindanao, Inquirer Visayas, and Inquirer Research.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.